Kicking with Keel here on Full Press Radio, episode number 42. Happy to be back with you once again today on a Sunday. I'm Ricky Keeler. We've got a lot to get into, a busy weekend of sports. We're going to preview week two of the NFL. Early this week, I talked with Jake Asman from Sports Map Radio, formerly SB Nation Radio. He hosts every weekday from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern. He's going to help me preview today's action with a week two word association. We talked to him Wednesday afternoon, right before Thursday night football, so keep that in mind. But I'll give you my five games to watch today. I'll give a little recap of week one, what I liked, what I didn't like. We'll do a little college football. Big Ten is back later this month, and we'll get a little bit into that, as well as what's gone on in week two of the season. I'll tell you why I don't like MLB maybe expanding the playoffs in future years and getting a new playoff format. We'll do a little recap so far of the NBA playoffs, conference finals in full swing, and game one of the Stanley Cup goes to the Dallas Stars. So we'll do a little bit of that. And then finally, a little U.S. Open golf. Crazy stuff going on at Wingfoot. We'll look ahead to the final round later today up in Mamaroneck, New York. A lot of exciting things today in the world of sports. I want to remind you, you can follow me on Twitter at RickNader555. It's at R-I-C-K, letter I, Nader like in Terminator and 3 5s. Follow us on Twitter at Full Press Radio, at Full Press Radio, at FP underscore coverage. We have sites every NBA, MLB, NFL, NHL, team, wrestling, MMA, college sports. If you're looking for a site that has it, we got it. But if you're looking to contribute, again, fullpresscoverage.com/contribute. You can be a part of our team today. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Please give us a rating. Hope it's 5 stars, but I want to hear from you. What do you like? What do you don't like? And also, you can email me, rickjkeeler@gmail.com. And also subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Chances are Kicking with Keeler is there. Reminder to download the Full Press Coverage app on your iOS or Android device. So if you miss any of this podcast or want to catch our live radio shows during the week, which we'll get into a little bit later, or miss any of our articles, just go to the iOS or Google Play app, and you can download it today. So looking ahead to, let's look back at week two first before we look back at week one before we get into week two. And I want to give you some of my surprises and my disappointments, because I feel like we tend to know what things go on during the week. Like, there are certain results that are just expected. Other games, especially week one, especially I think in this era of 2020, a lot of things are unexpected. That's what makes this year weird, but interesting in a sense. Now, I'm going to start optimistic. I was shocked that Aaron Rodgers dominated as much as he did against the Vikings. Absolutely torched that secondary. Devontae Adams had 14 catches. And this is a Packer team, but I mentioned it all throughout the offseason, the second the Packers drafted Jordan Love in the first round. I think this was their Jimmy Garoppolo play, like what the Patriots did when they took Garoppolo as their future, and it kind of motivated Tom Brady to show them that he wasn't done. And Aaron Rodgers is kind of doing the same thing here. So if you're in that NFC, a motivated Aaron Rodgers is a scary thing. I think there are many surprises, such as the Jaguars. 3 touchdowns for Gardner Minshew is 19 for 20. Phillip Rivers made some ill-timed interceptions. That's not a surprise. What else is new? But that's a game the Colts can't lose. If you want to be considered in that good second tier of AFC contenders, you have to win that football game. Philadelphia blown a 17-point lead to the Washington football team. See, I almost said it. Didn't say it. The Washington football team. Eagles don't have much. Now, they'll get Miles Sanders back today, but they're looking to bring in Devontae Freeman to help that running game, but Philly is lacking many big skill players. That was a surprise. Arizona going into San Francisco. We had Ryan Averdorada from both Full Press Cardinals and Full Press 49ers on last week, and if you're the Cardinals, Kyler Murray used DeAndre Hopkins a lot. Kyler Murray also made some plays with his legs. The Niners obviously banged up. No George Kittle this week. No Richard Sherman this week. I'm not that concerned about the 49ers. I think Sunday's game was more of a surprise in the good direction for Arizona, because that NFC West is definitely wide open. And you look at the Rams, too, getting a win over Dallas, in which Jared Goff did not throw a touchdown. That's a good sign for the Rams as well. Malcolm Brown had a nice game. Add to that trio with Brown, Henderson, and Cam Akers in that backfield. In terms of disappointments, well, I mean, the Heat would be a surprise disappointment. Philly would be a surprise disappointment. I was very disappointed in Tennessee despite the win. Stephen Gostkowski missed 3 field goals, missed an extra point, made the game-winning field goal late because Denver doesn't know how to control the clock. But the Titans, I thought, would have been a lot dominant in that game. Now they don't have A.J. Brown this today against the Jaguars. Tennessee, as I've said, doesn't have the offense to blow out an opponent and relies a lot on their defense and Derrick Henry. They got lucky in week one. I don't know if that's exactly a formula to get back to the AFC Championship game. I thought the Lions were a major disappointment. You get up 23-6. You've got to hold that lead. But again, Lions are going to lion. They blow it. Mitch Trubisky saves his job for the time being. We'll see what happens today against the New York Giants, which I think is an interesting football game. I thought the Patriots were a very positive surprise. And you might say, yeah, well, Ricky, you're a Patriot fan. You would think that because they've won. I don't think people expected Cam Newton to look as good as he did. Yes, he threw the ball only 19 times. I think you'll see more of a vertical passing game tonight against the Seahawks. But the Patriots did some different things we're not used to seeing from them in 20 years. They did a lot of RPOs. They did a lot of zone reads. Cam, I thought, was really good on the run. 15 carries, most you've seen from a Patriot quarterback. 2 touchdowns. I love the leadership he showed, especially in the second touchdown, letting center David Andrews spike the ball. And Andrews had made his return for the first time in a year. That's leadership. That's a guy that has won respect over in that locker room. The Patriot defense, which lost a lot of key pieces, yes, it's the Dolphins, but they were all over the Dolphins receivers all day long. They made it really tough for Mike Gesicki. Someone like Jawan Williams did a really nice job in that secondary. Stephon Gilmore had a pick because he's the best corner in the league. And their front seven did a good job stopping the run. And that 21-11 score is not indicative of that game, because if N'Keal Harry does not fumble inside the 5-yard line, the ball doesn't go out of the end zone, New England's taking a 21-3 lead, and that game looks a lot different. So I thought the Patriots dominated more than the score indicated. The same way I thought the Bills dominated more than their score indicated. Beat the Jets 27-17, but as we get into it, Jake, a little bit later, the Jets are an absolute train wreck. Frank Gore starting today at running back. No, this is not 2010. Frank Gore is actually starting at running back in 2020. But I'll get into later why I don't know if I would watch the Jet-Niner game if I had a choice. Now, let me give you my 5 games to watch today for week 2. And then we'll preview them with our word association segment. My first game, I'm going to turn to the game. Actually, I'm going to turn to tomorrow. I'm going to turn to that Monday night game in Vegas, Saints-Raiders. No Michael Thomas for the Saints officially. He's out, so the Saints are going to rely a lot on Alvin Kamara in the ground game. And Emmanuel Sanders, I think, is going to have a good day in the receiving section for the Saints. This is a big game for the Raiders. Their schedule gets crazy tough after this week. Games in New England, Kansas City, Tampa. You name it, the Raiders probably play them. So for Vegas, Josh Jacobs has to basically repeat what he did last week in Carolina with the 4 touchdowns that he had. You're going to have to get a little bit more passing offense from Derek Carr. But I think the Raiders in that new stadium, which I'm interested to see what it looks like, can they get that big statement win in week 2? Because if they don't, it's going to be a long road over the next month to try to get back to a respectable record, I think. So a bigger game for the Raiders, and it's the Saints. Saints can afford to lose this one. I don't think the Raiders can. My second game, I'm going to go to Tennessee. I mentioned earlier, the Titans are not exactly a team I'd be high on. I know the spread was pretty high for this game. And Jacksonville played well. I think they can keep it close. Their defense made some big plays against Phillip Rivers. They could do it here against Ryan Tannehill. They ran the ball pretty well last week with James Robinson. I would not be shocked if Jacksonville won this football game today against the Titans. My third game, I'm going to go to Indianapolis. Big game, Vikings and Colts. Both need a win. I think Minnesota needs it more than Indianapolis because the AFC South is still wide open even if the Colts lose. But both teams are struggling to defend the pass. So which quarterback between Phillip Rivers and Kirk Cousins has the bigger game, I think, is going to be the story in this one. Falcons-Cowboys, another battle of 0-1s. Bigger game, I think, for Atlanta. But if Dallas starts 0-2, you're going to hear why did they hire Mike McCarthy. Because you look at last week, Dallas was down 3 in field goal range, went for it, and they ended up losing by 3 points. The Cowboys have to be better on offense. And I think today could be the day. Falcons struggled on defense against Russell Wilson last week. Wilson went 31-35. I don't know if Dak will do that, but I think Dak's in a much better game today But still, big one for both teams at 0-1. And finally, tonight's game in Seattle. And I think this is a bigger game for the Seahawks. And I'll tell you why. I think this is a chance for Bill Belichick to have his first moral victory in 20 years. A lot of people don't expect the Patriots to go into Seattle and win this game. Full disclosure, I'm picking Seattle to win this game. Yeah, I think Russell Wilson is in arguably a top three quarterback in the league right now. I think the Patriots contain Russell Wilson. I don't think they can stop him because of his mobility out of the pocket. Chris Carson has had a great game last week. I think he picks up from last week. The Patriots, I think, will do something different. Maybe they do some screens to James White. Maybe Cam takes some more shots downfield with N'Keal Harry. I could see that being a possibility. They don't do the same thing every week. But if Cam plays well, and the Patriots go into Seattle, and let's say they lose by a field goal or by a touchdown, let's say. Very close game throughout. I think the Patriots will gain a lot more respect. Now, it's Bill Belichick, Ricky. Why would the Patriots have to gain more respect? Because I still think people don't believe the Patriots have a chance to win the AFCs. I think a lot of people have given the Bills a division already. They kind of want to crown something new. But if New England went in and actually stole this game with no fans in Seattle, then you're talking about the Patriots. They would talk about them the way they're talking about the Steelers right now. Which, I get it. Pittsburgh had a good game against the Giants, but let's remember, the Giants had a 19-play drive end on an interception. That game could have been a lot different than it ended up being. I think the Steelers are good. I don't think they're great. I think the Chiefs and Ravens are in that first year, and then it's everybody else in the AFC. And it's been that way since the offseason. But if New England can go into Seattle and beat a team that's one of the favorites in the NFC, that sends a big statement throughout the league that Cam and Belichick are here to stay, regardless of people talking about, is it sustainable? Is it sustainable? Can't even give Cam credit for one football game. It's got to be, is it sustainable? Really, people? Give him a shot. So that's my five games for week two. I'll give you an honorary mention. Let me talk about the Buccaneers real quick. A lot of people got on Tom Brady last week, including his own coach, Bruce Arians. He threw two interceptions. One was a pick six. I'm not ready to panic yet from the Buccaneers. If they lose today to Carolina, even without Chris Godwin for the Bucs, then I'd panic. Because next week the Buccaneers go to Denver, and Tom Brady doesn't really play well in Denver historically. But look at what the Buccaneers had last week. They didn't have many practices outside of training camp, so that plays a factor. Mike Evans was banged up. Tried to play, not 100%. That played a factor. Leonard Fournette just coming in. The Bucs don't have that running back rotation set up yet. That's a factor. Playing in the Superdome against a team that has many practices together over the years in the Saints. That's a factor. Tampa Bay, I did not think was going to win that football game. It's not an indictment on Tom Brady. He's getting used to throwing the ball to everybody new. It's something different in 20 years. It's going to take time for this Bucs offense to click. It's not just going to show up and just run like clockwork. Doesn't mean they're not going to be good. And I wouldn't panic about Arians ripping Brady in the media, but I would also wonder what Tom Brady was thinking, because while Bill Belichick probably was ripping Brady behind the scenes, he never did it publicly. Tom would get called out in a meeting room, but that was just to show the other players, I can rip Tom Brady too, I can rip you. We saw a different approach from Arians. Now, that doesn't mean it can't work, but it's something different we're not used to seeing. And that in itself is eye-opening in a way. But while Carolina's offense played well against Vegas last week, the Panthers have a lot of rookies starting on the defensive side of the ball today. I think that's going to play a factor, and I think the Buccaneers are going to get back on track. I think Tom Brady's got a lot more left in the tank. And again, keep an eye on Scotty Miller. I've been telling you, the guy can play. Be sure to get your fantasy lineups in. We got our own fantasy league here, the Full Press Coverage Fantasy League, which they update you on every week on FPC Live with Ian Glendon and Mike DeBate. I won last week. I beat Kyle Senra, who's the host of Full Press Coverage Fantasy. Now, Kyle does help me with my league, helped me win last year, so I'm honored to actually beat Kyle. I get CJ Sweat today, who is the editor of Full Press Panthers. Could be a tough matchup. Hopefully, I get to 2-0. I know Ian went 1-0, and I'm looking forward to that matchup with Ian down the road. Maybe I can beat him, but we'll have some updates on that throughout the year on our full press coverage fantasy shows. It was a lot of fun. We were talking a lot of different radio hosts and things like that on our 10-team league. Had like 155 points last week. Insane number. Wish I was that good in my other leagues. So we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. I'll play our Week 2 Word Association segment with Jake Asman, who does a lot of ripping for the Jets, and rightfully so. And then we'll come back after that, and we'll do a little college football recap in Week 2. And with the Big Ten playing college football later in October, I'll get into that coming up. You're listening to Kicking with Keeler here on the Full Press Radio Network. We'll be right back. And our guest this week, you might know him nationally on a Sports Map Radio. Does a show every weekday from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Eastern. Always has some great interviews. He's a Jet fan, so we're going to have him, of course, talk about the Jets' woes from last week and much more. Jake Asman is here. Jake, welcome. How you doing?
Ricky, thanks so much for having me, man. I'm hanging in. Hope all is well.
Doing pretty good. So tell the listeners out there where they can catch your show and what you like to do for 2 hours every weekday.
Yeah, so, you kind of mentioned it at the top, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Eastern time on the SportsMap Radio Network, formerly SB Nation Radio, but rebranded the network name at the end of July. So the show I do is a national show, basically hitting on whatever's topical on that given day. But now that it's football season, heavy dosage of NFL football, certainly, and a heavy dosage of just reacting to all the games, and I'm just glad that we have games to react to, for sure.
So before we look at Week 2, let's take a look at Week 1, take a quick look back. What was the biggest takeaway from Week 1 for you?
I think it has to be, just what we saw with Tom Brady making his debut with the Buccaneers. I mean, that's the game everyone wanted to talk about. I mean, that was the game that Fox said they had the highest ratings on since a Super Bowl broadcast 4 years ago. So, just looking at Brady playing in Tampa for the first time and seeing, kind of an up and down performance. They started off great with that first drive, and you're thinking, wow, I mean, here come the Bucs. Look at this. And then, they were sluggish at times. Brady got fooled with a really bad interception that was returned the other way for a pick six. And then just looking at, the Saints team kind of flying under the radar in a sense that all the talk's been about Brady and Tampa. And, here come the Saints, a team that's won more regular season games over the last 3 years than any team in football. So just looking at that matchup and those two quarterbacks going at it, I think that is, just it was a fun game to watch and obviously what everyone was looking to see.
Yeah, I don't know what people expected from Tom Brady right away as the Patriot fan here with a close eye on Tom Brady. It was more of Mike Evans isn't healthy. They've had a virtual offseason where he can't really get connected with really any of his big wide receivers. Though he tried to. He had a lot of interesting practices during a COVID quarantine, which is a different topic of conversation. But I don't think you're going to see this team click until first month of the season. I mean, going into the Superdome, was their best chance to win without fans there? Yes. But the Saints are the better football team. It's clear. And then I think the bigger takeaway was more Arians calling out Brady when in actuality, the whole team didn't really play very well.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. And it's unfortunate. This is kind of, what sports talk radio or what debate shows have become. No one could just say, he had an off game, look at the circumstances, you just laid them out, lack of an offseason, new team, learning a new offense. No one wants to hear it because it's immediately, oh, well, Belichick won with Cam and Brady lost his first game. And then we don't consider the fact that Tom Brady's 43 years old. So even if he stinks this year, I don't think all of a sudden it means, Tom Brady was only good because of Bill Belichick, right? So that's just kind of the world we're living in with sports takes. But there's no doubt. I think the Tampa team that we see by the end of the year is going to be a heck of a lot better than the team we saw play week one.
Yeah, the only other takeaway was Tom Brady looks weird in Tampa white. I watched for a little bit. I'm like, this is not what this is supposed to look like. But I'm not one to gloat either. Belichick won, but Belichick's team played the Dolphins and Tom Brady played the Saints. Let's see how it evens out this week. And then we can, as the sample size gets larger, have more of that conversation. But I would recommend also people read the Dynasty. You can see Belichick and Brady. I haven't finished it yet, but I've been through about half. And you can see the shared correlation between the two. You don't have to argue who's better than that, but that's a different type of conversation. So one other question before we dive into this slate of games. Give me a team you think needs a big week two, besides Tampa, because we've already, I think, touched on them.
Yeah, I think it's actually a game that's going to be coming up on Thursday Night Football. I think it's the Cleveland Browns. I mean, it's one thing to have the season they had last year where everything went wrong. Kitchens gets fired, you know, at the end of the season, and you just knew from the beginning he was in over his head. You have, you know, some of the rumblings already with Odell Beckham and whether or not the Browns are going to be shopping him. You just have, you know, kind of a very combustible like team that's already, you know, dealing with what happened last year. And you know, through one game, Baker Mayfield was terrible. And now he's in his third year with all his talent around him, and he has to play better. He has to take a big step forward. So, you know, it's one thing to play the Ravens. The Ravens might be the best team in football. So if you lose to them, all right, fine. Maybe we'll give you the mulligan. But if they go out there against the Bengals playing a rookie quarterback in Joe Burrow at home and they lose to that Cincinnati team and Baker plays poor, I have a funny feeling the Browns are just going to be, you know, in for what could be another three or four win season if that's the case. I think it's very important for them to bounce back. And certainly, you know, for their quarterback, the first pick in the draft a couple of years ago in Baker Mayfield, to start playing like a guy that's a franchise quarterback.
If we were doing word association for this game, and we're not, just because it's a Thursday night game, you'll hear this segment after the Thursday game, so no predictions from this game will be held against anybody here. But I would call it the No Excuses Bowl, because for Baker Mayfield, there's no excuses for him. They've gave him the offensive line. They've given him the running backs. They gave him a coach that prides on running the football. Get it done. And I know Odell is one of those guys that the body language was a big focus in week one, where he got a lot of targets but hardly any catches. Baker Mayfield has to perform. If he gets outperformed by Joe Burrow, there's bigger problems in Cleveland, where to the point that I feel Stefanski's not this regime is not tied to Baker Mayfield. I could easily see if the Browns have a bad year just simply moving out of another quarterback, and then you can add Mayfield to that long list of jerseys that fan has with the Browns quarterbacks.
Right. And you know what? You look at a guy like Baker Mayfield, he's kind of in the Mitch Trubisky situation from last year, where the team's expected to take a big step forward. You know, they're counting on him to emerge as a franchise guy, and Trubisky in his third year regressed to the point where the team then went and brought in a veteran, Nick Foles, to compete with them. We're probably going to see that with the Browns if Baker's bad again this year, and then all of a sudden he's going into his fourth year. I doubt they pick up his fifth year option, and then, you know, we're dealing with the situation in Cleveland, like what's happening now in Chicago. So no doubt he has to be better. The Browns as a team have to be better. You know, you look at it like Sam Darnold with the Jets. He's got nothing around him offensively. You look at what Baker's had. There's no excuse to use lack of weapons or a bad offensive line. Like, the Browns got to be better. I mean, it's one thing to get beat by the Ravens, but they were embarrassed. So they better go out there by the time this airs and have beaten the Bengals on Thursday Night Football.
Except both teams are struggling at kickers, so I would not recommend picking up any kickers if you're looking for field goals. If you thought Monday was bad, this Thursday game might be bad. But let's play a little Week 2 word association. For those not familiar with the show, here's how we play. If you're familiar with going into a psychiatrist or to a doctor's office and they show you an ink blot and they ask you to name the first word or phrase that pops in your head when looking at the ink blot, we do that with football games. So we have a little fun with Week 2. Breaking down some matchups for you. We'll spend some time, extensive time on the Jets. We usually spend extensive time on the Patriots. Well, because it's my show and I do what I want. So let's move on to the first game on our schedule. And it's in Chicago, where the Giants, after some would say a good performance and a loss against the Steelers on Monday, taking on a Bears team that was ready to change quarterbacks up until, well, the Lions pulled the Detroit Lions in the fourth quarter. So, Jake, what's your word or phrase for Giants-Bears?
Ooh. Word or phrase. I would go for this game. I would go Daniel Jones, show me something. Because I agree with you. I thought in that Monday night game, there were a lot of positive signs for the Giants. I didn't think they got outcoached in that game, which is a good sign for Joe Judge. I thought they just lost to a team that's better than them. And the Giants, that game really came down to the two missed opportunities. Early on, before Pittsburgh even touched the ball after the muffed punt, Giants at the 3-yard line couldn't punch it in for 7. That could have changed the complexion of the game early on. Instead, they settled for a field goal. And then you had the 19-play drive when the Giants were down 6. That ends with Daniel Jones throwing the interception in the end zone to Cam Hayward. So it came down to missed opportunities. Now you're playing a Bears team that is not the Steelers. Good defense, but not the Steelers. I want to see Daniel Jones have more of a complete game. And instead of turning the ball over, go turnover free and see if the Giants can maybe, you know, surprise some people and get a win over the Bears. And then, you know, you look at it from the Bears perspective. Obviously, you know, the phrase might be for them, you know, just win somehow, because they won last week. And if they could somehow start 2-0 with Trubisky, I think that would have a lot of people's heads spinning.
Yeah, I'm going to go with trade winds brewing in regards to Allen Robinson. Obviously, he said in a statement on Wednesday that he still, his heart's in Chicago. I get that, but you can tell how frustrated he is without getting a contract. And when you want to help your trade stock, you face the Giants secondary. That usually will get you two or three touchdowns, regardless of who's playing quarterback. So even if Trubisky has a bad game, Allen Robinson's probably going to have like 8 catches for like 90 yards and a couple touchdowns. And the Bears should win. But still, I would argue Nick Foles should be a quarterback, but the Lions pull the Lions and save Mitch Trubisky's job. So second chance Trubisky would be another good one here. Let's go to Dallas. Battle of 0-1s looking to get on the right track. The Falcons and the Cowboys. Jake, what are you thinking here?
A lot of offense. I think both these teams are going to go up and down. You saw Matt Ryan in week one, you know, throw for like 450 yards and 2 touchdowns. And Calvin Ridley had a big game. And then I think the Cowboys, you know, they just play better at home. You know, they score way more points at home than they do on the road. I think Atlanta's defense is not very good. So I think the Cowboys might air it out at Jerry World. So I see a lot of points here. I mean, one of these teams is going to be 0-2. And I think, you know, you kind of look at the Falcons. No one's talked about them in that division because it's been all about Brady and Breeze. But, you know, Matt Ryan's a heck of a quarterback. But it just seems like, you know, as long as Dan Quinn's there and, you know, as long as the defense is kind of mediocre at best, they're not going to be able to do anything. So I see a lot of points in this one. I would take the over if you're a gambler out there.
Yeah, I would go vertical passing game. You got Julio, Calvin Ridley, Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup. So many names of wide receivers. Hayden Hurst, the tight end for the Falcons. Obviously, no Blake Jarwin for Dallas. You could argue the Cowboys might be better off running the football here because Seattle had so much success with Chris Carson in week one, although Carson had a lot of receiving touchdowns. Atlanta can't stop the run either. And Dallas, you would think, has to kind of get back to using Ezekiel Elliott a little bit more. Maybe don't go for it when you're down 3 and you end up losing by 3. So maybe it's a battle of which coach doesn't screw up between Dan Quinn and Mike McCarthy, and that's tough to do.
No doubt. I mean, Mike McCarthy didn't exactly endear himself to the new fans with some of his decisions at the end of that game on Sunday night. So now, you know, back at home, first time coaching, you know, at Jerry World, I think 25% capacity of fans will be on hand there. So, you know, we'll see. I think it's an important game for the Cowboys to avoid that 0-2 hole.
Let's go to Green Bay, where the Lions, after their collapse, to be polite, against Chicago in the fourth quarter at Lambeau against a motivated Aaron Rodgers after his 4-touchdown performance in week one.
A-Rodge revenge tour continues. I think Rodgers is going to go out there and just continue to put up big numbers. We saw it against the Vikings last week where he threw 4 touchdowns. I think, honestly, the best thing the Packers maybe did by accident was annoy Aaron Rodgers to the point where maybe he just has like a throwback season and he's better than he's been the last 3 or 4 years. So I fully expect Green Bay at home to cover the number here and win. And I think the Aaron Rodgers is angry at the world tour will continue.
Yeah, I'm going to go Aaron airs it out. I mean, he did that in week one. You should see that in week two. I said it on my show. It's kind of like the Tom Brady, Jimmy Garoppolo effect. You draft a rookie, piss off the starting quarterback, and then eventually it leads to the starting quarterback having a career season. It looks like Aaron Rodgers is on that track. He still could use a number 2 wide receiver, but they could figure that out in due time. Who knows? They might even trade for one. But the Packers, I think, are in a really good position. The Lions, how do you bounce back after last week? You had 1-0 staring you in the face, and you blew it. I think they easily fall to 0-2 in the division. To Tennessee, where it's Jaguars and Titans. Battle of 1-0s, surprised by the Jags last week. I'll go first here. I'll go a Lee Corso phrase, closer than the experts think. Tennessee's favored by 9. And the Titans aren't really a team that are fit to blow anybody out. Like, we saw that in Denver. Ryan Tannehill didn't really have much success throwing the ball down the field, albeit Corey Davis had a nice game. A.J. Brown struggled big time. And Gardner Minshew was efficient. They ran the ball okay. Their defense made some big plays, forced some turnovers, which you can do against the Titans. Tennessee can't kick field goals. We've seen that, and it's painful to watch Stephen Gostkowski, as someone who used to watch him make kicks. But I think this game, while I think Tennessee will win, I think Jacksonville is going to be right in the thick of things here.
My phrase for this would be respect Gardner Minshew. If you look at Minshew last year, just at what he did productivity-wise, as a starting quarterback, he went 6-6 last year as the Jags starter and threw 21 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. All this talk has been about, the Jags are tanking for Trevor Lawrence, and I've never bought into that. I watched Minshew last year. He played well. And if he wasn't just a 6th round pick, we wouldn't be even having the conversation about quarterback for Jacksonville. He's capable of emerging as a guy that could be the long-term answer in Jacksonville. And we saw him come out in week one and play, as you mentioned, efficient football, 19 of 20, three touchdown passes, didn't turn the ball over. Respect Gardner Minshew. I think he's going to continue to play well this year, and I agree with you. I think this spread's a little bit too high. I would take the Jaguars to cover on the road.
To Indianapolis, which I think is another really intriguing game of two teams that desperately need a win, the Vikings and the Colts. Jake, what are you thinking here?
Ooh, this is a tough one. Both teams, as you said, really could use the win. Phillip Rivers bounce back. He was so bad last week, and he was erratic. He just didn't really look like he was comfortable. I think another week in this offense at home. I think this Vikings defense is vastly overrated. I think Phillip Rivers bounce back is what we'll see with Indy now at home.
I'm going to go secure secondaries here. And the reason I do that route is the Vikings secondary was awful against Aaron Rodgers last week. The Colts secondary, surprisingly, was awful against Gardner Minshew last week. Both these teams need to figure out their secondary because both these teams have good front sevens, but the back end of their defense are struggling. So it could be just which secondary doesn't allow the big play between Cousins and Rivers, because both are going to try to get the ball downfield, Rivers more so than Cousins, which leads to picks. So maybe it's whichever secondary performs well wins this game. Let's go to Miami, where the Bills try to go to 2-0 at the Dolphins' home. Remember, Miami is one of those teams that actually has fans in this game. And I'm going to go with ball control as my word or phrase here, because Josh Allen still fumbled twice last week. He runs the ball a lot, which leads to turnovers. Of course, we all know Ryan Fitzpatrick likes to throw interceptions with three last week, but he maybe got all those interceptions out of his system. The Dolphins aren't playing a team that's going to run it 45 times, so it's more of a conventional look for the Dolphins. I'm not saying the Bills will lose, but it could come down to turnover margin in this one.
Upset brewing would be mine. I like the Dolphins in this one. I think the Bills are vastly overrated. We talk about them like they're this great team, and they just haven't done anything yet to warrant that type of praise. Oh, but Jake, they won 10 games last year. Yeah, and when I say the Jets went 6-2 in the second half, people said, well, they had an easy schedule. The Bills played the same exact opponents as the Jets. None of their wins last year are that impressive. That win over the Cowboys on Thanksgiving, I mean, what did it really mean when we found out what the Cowboys truly were by the end of the year? I just think the fact that the Dolphins also just saw a running quarterback in Cam Newton will help them be prepared to try and slow down Josh Allen. And you're gonna make the Bills are good enough to be a 5.5-point road favorite. I don't see it. I think the Dolphins went outright. Upset Bruins, my phrase.
I like it. And I agree with you on the Bills. I've never seen a team get credit for more moral victories against the Patriots than the Bills seem to get. That Josh Allen played so well against New England. Meanwhile, you can argue two of Josh Allen's worst games last year were against New England. And coming off of a 16-point blown lead in the wild card game, I've never seen a team get that much. I guess it's just because someone wants to see somebody else win. I think the Bills are good. I don't think they're great. And I even think you saw it against the Jets. They could have won that game like 45-10, and yep, they only won it by 10 points.
Yeah, the Jets single-handedly, you know, like did nothing in that game to warrant even being within 10, as the final score indicated, because Allen turned the ball over. They missed kicks. I mean, Allen also missed a wide-open Josh Brown in the end zone. So I think he's a decent quarterback, but the way people talk about him, you know, as if he's like this franchise quarterback already, I just think it's a little too premature.
Let's go to the battle at MetLife Stadium. Battle of two teams, also 0-1. The Niners and the Jets. A lot of 0-1s facing each other this week. I'm going to call this, before I let you, Jake, chime in on the Jets and let you ramble Adam Gase, I'm going to call this the Flip the Channel Bowl, because there's always one game each week where you just want to flip the channel unless you're on Red Zone. I think this is it. George Kittle might not play. Richard Sherman's out. Le'Veon Bell's out. So really, who's recognizable that you're watching in this game? Raheem Mostert? Jimmy Garoppolo, maybe? I mean, on the Jets side, are you watching Jameson Crowder? This might be one where you just look for your fantasy score and you don't watch a lot of this if you're not a Niners or Jets fan.
Yeah, I'm with you there, man. My phrase would be pray for Sam Darnold. I mean, you look at Denzel Mims being placed on IR. He's out again. Le'Veon Bell, who hurt his hamstring against the Bills, he's now on IR, so he's missing at least the next three games. You know, you look at what Sam's working with. Mekhi Becton is now day-to-day at left tackle. So who's going to stop who's going to stop Nick Bosa from coming after Sam? You know, pray for Darnold. You know, the Jets are a 7-point home dog. And honestly, I think that spread should be even higher just based on how poor you know, the Jets played last week. Now I get it. San Fran traveling cross country. San Fran lost last week, but they lost to a good Cardinals team. And now they're highly motivated to bounce back, even without, you know, a Kittle or even without, you know, Richard Sherman, who I saw was placed on IR today. I just think the 49ers are going to come in highly motivated. And I don't know if the Jets are going to be able to score any points on that defense.
Well, since you're the Jet fan, I'll ask you this. How much blame is Gase and how much blame is Darnold? Because we've seen Darnold, I like him. We've seen him make some crazy mistakes. Is it just because he doesn't have much around him, or do you feel there's been regression with him?
So I look at it like this. I thought going into the year, I was not going to judge the Jets necessarily based on their record. I was going to judge them based on how Sam Darnold looks. So if Sam regresses this year, that is ultimately on Adam Gase. Now, that first game, he was terrible. I mean, I'm a huge Sam Darnold guy, and I've defended him at times because I think what he's working with is just not fair. You know, we talked about Baker Mayfield earlier. If Sam had that type of talent, I think the Jets would be, you know, a playoff team with Sam at quarterback if he had that around him. But Adam Gase is supposed to be a quarterback guy and get the best out of Darnold. That really hasn't happened yet, and I think Sam has had to do a lot of heavy lifting just on his own. You know, the Jets had a winning record when Sam played last year, and they were 7-5 when he came back from mono. So I'm not ready to say, oh, he can't be a good quarterback. But the problem is, I think the coach that the Jets have is never going to allow Sam to be at his very best. And what would kill me is if the Jets moved on from Sam, because I just don't think we're not going to know what he truly can be as long as Gase is here. So I just hope Sam could, despite the obstacles he's facing, really show us something. I don't think he's nearly as bad as he played last week. I think he's capable of being a lot better than that, and I think he will be a lot better than that. I just hope he shows the Jets enough to continue to stick with them.
And you need a coach that actually believes in running the football, because it's not like Frank Gore is going to find the fountain of youth and get 25 carries this week. And then you're looking at Josh Adams as your backup. I mean, Darnold can't succeed if you don't have a balanced attack, especially with that offensive line. So Gase has to either change his strategy, or he might be looking at the unemployment line really quickly. Let's go to Philly, where the Rams at 1-0 take on the winless Eagles. I'm going to go with Wounded Birds Return. There's Adam Schefter from ESPN tweeted Wednesday, as we record this, a good sign that Lane Johnson and Miles Sanders will play, and the Eagles need both on the offensive line and in the running game specifically. Carson Wentz was awful in the second half last week against Washington. Philly needs this game badly. The Rams played well against Dallas. I think it'll be a close game, but Philly needs Miles Sanders back because they have nothing on that offense.
No doubt. To me, this game is, you know, all about, you know, the Wentz rebound game. You know, the Eagles can't start 0-2 when the expectations for them were through the roof. And I've been a Carson Wentz defender, but you can't defend his performance last week. I mean, blowing the 17-0 lead, that interception he threw really changed the entire course of that game. Eagles at home, I get it, no fans, but the Rams still have to travel across the country to play this football game. Eagles better bounce back, and, you know, Carson Wentz certainly better take care of the football and play a lot better.
Let's go to Pittsburgh, where the Broncos at 0-1 take on the 1-0 Steelers. And my word here is time management, because Vic Fangio could use a little time management. I don't know how you let all that time run off the clock on Monday, even if Stephen Gostkowski is bad at kicking field goals. You give Drew Lock no time. Denver right now is a mess. Pittsburgh's in pretty good form. You could also go Peculiar Snell, especially if James Conner doesn't play. Benny Snell's doing some good things. I like what Pittsburgh's doing, even with Denver, with only really Melvin Gordon out running back. I think this should be an easy win for the Steelers.
I agree. You know, to me, this is, you know, just – I'm trying to come up with a phrase to articulate it. You know, I think, you know, battle of defenses would be a way to put it, because I think Denver's got a defense to hang in. But I just don't trust, you know, that Bronco offense, which we saw last week on Monday Night Football, being able to put up enough points against the Steelers. I just think the Steelers at home, you know, with the way that Big Ben looked in his first game back, I thought he got better as that game went on. I see Pittsburgh, you know, continuing to play well here and, you know, making a case that outside of Kansas City and outside of Baltimore, they're that third team that we should be talking about in the AFC as a legit contender.
Let's go to Tampa. We touched on this game earlier, so we won't spend too much time on it. Panthers and Bucks, it's two words, Brady's back. Carolina doesn't have a defense. You saw what the Raiders did to them. And I think the Bucks will find more balance this week, maybe get Leonard Fournette more involved, maybe use Ronald Jones more in the passing game. I love Scotty Miller.
I think he's the Tampa Bay version of Julian Edelman. I've said that since training camp. So I think Brady's back is just a simple word here.
Brady bounce back would be mine. I'm same line of thought as you. I just can't see the Bucs starting 0-2. Carolina played better than I thought they would. They would against the Raiders last week, but I think Tampa now at home. Brady always comes out and plays better after he has a bad football game. So I expect him to bounce back and play well. And just ultimately, I think Tampa Bay's defense will make life very difficult for Teddy Bridgewater. And I fully expect this Tampa team to bounce back. We, you know, everyone's criticizing the Bucs and, oh, they're overhyped. They played the Saints. They might be the best team in the NFC. Now that, you know, the Bucs are clearly the better team in this matchup, a 9-point favorite, I expect them to bounce back.
Yeah, and if you look at it for Tampa, if they lose this game, they go to Denver next week. And if you're looking for time to research something over the next week, go look at Tom Brady's numbers in Denver. Not good. Bucks could be actually looking at 0-3 if they lose this game. And not really what you want if you're looking at signing Tom Brady and doing big things. Let's go to the 4 o'clock window. Washington at the Cardinals. I'm going to go with college reunion. This is a battle of two quarterbacks that were known for doing good things in college. Kyler Murray, of course, the Heisman Trophy winner. And Dwayne Haskins, who had a pretty good college career himself, had a good second half against the Eagles. Kyler Murray, of course, stole the show in week one. But you also wonder if Arizona's a little bit too high off of that win over the Niners. And as we saw, Washington's defense can wreak havoc. So I'm interested to see how both these former great college quarterbacks fare in week two.
Yeah, to me, it's letdown coming. I'm with you there. I think Washington is underrated. You know, I think people underestimate how good that front seven is. I mean, when you have a mixture of veterans and then, you know, Chase Young looking like an all-pro in his first game, I think Washington is going to kind of be flying under the radar all season. They're probably not going to be a playoff team, but to me, they're that team that could ruin a lot of people's parlays every couple of weeks, a lot of people's survivor pools. So I think Washington has a legitimate chance to make this interesting. Arizona might still win, but that 6.5 is a high number. I probably would take the Redskins, or excuse me, the Washington football team with that line.
Yeah, and also it's the NFC East. Anybody can be a playoff team in the NFC East, so you never know with Washington. Let's go That's true. The 4:30 window or the 4:25 window. Chiefs at the Chargers. First game for the Chargers in that fancy new stadium, but I'm going to go with running the Clydesdale. Clyde Edwards-Helaire was fantastic in week one. I'm expecting him to actually get some passes in week two. Signed Clyde Edwards-Helaire, fantasy owner here. We'd love some pass catches. But Patrick Mahomes, in all honesty, didn't have his greatest game on last Thursday night and still went 24-32. I don't know how the Chargers, as good as their defense was last week, stop Patrick Mahomes at all this week.
Yeah, blowout coming is my thought on this. I just don't see how the Chargers are going to be able to score enough points. Everyone loves to talk about the Chiefs offense, and I get it. They're great. They have the best player in football in Patrick Mahomes. But what people don't discuss is just how nasty that Chiefs defense is. Steve Spagnuolo, now in his second year as a defensive coordinator there, had that team by the end of last year, the last 6 weeks of the regular season. They had the number one ranked defense in football. Never gets talked about. Then their defense played well in the playoffs when they needed to make big stops. And we saw that defense really cause a lot of harm to Deshaun Watson in that Thursday night opener. I think the Chargers defense is very good. But ultimately, the Chiefs just score too many points, and I don't think Tyrod Taylor is capable of scoring that many points himself leading that offense. So to me, this is a blowout coming.
We'll go to Houston, where the 1-0 Ravens, after their dominant win over the Browns, take on the 0-1 Texans. And my word for this is Bill O'Brien questions. Because Bill O'Brien's going to look back when the Ravens are dominating this game and said, who did I make angry at the NFL schedule office that makes me play the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Steelers, the Vikings, first 4 weeks of the season? You get the Jags and you get Tennessee and Green Bay. I mean, you honestly could be staring 1-5 directly in the face. And the Texans are not that bad, but without DeAndre Hopkins, you saw this offense was not as explosive in week one. I'm expecting the same in week two against a really good Ravens defense.
To me, it's cover your eyes. From the Texans standpoint, it's just cover your eyes, because here's the thing for Houston. They cannot stop the run. That's the biggest plague they have defensively. We saw it last week with Clyde Edwards-Helaire gashing them. They got gashed last year pretty much all season. And what do the Ravens do well? Oh, I don't know. They might have this MVP quarterback that is as dynamic as a runner as we've ever seen at that position. So I just, between him and Dobbins and Ingram, I just don't think the Texans are going to be able to stop this Ravens offense. And it could get ugly fast for Houston if Deshaun Watson doesn't carry them and score a bunch of points.
And I think the Ravens will just rub it in by like getting Ingram a score, Dobbins a score. Hey, Justice Hill, you get a score. Gus Edwards, you get a score. Lamar's going to get... Basically, don't Ravens pass catchers might not get anything because they'll just run for like six touchdowns.
Right.
They'll just do that the entire day and make every fantasy owner not happy when you own Mark Andrews. Let's go to Sunday Night Football in Seattle. Battle between Cam Newton and Russell Wilson as the Patriots take on the Seahawks. I'll let you go first, Jake, because then I'll give my in-depth thoughts afterwards.
Russell Wilson's MVP campaign will continue. I expect him to play really well here. Seattle was... a team I thought was certainly capable of going to a Super Bowl. There are a few guys in the NFL that I look at and go, how have they never won an MVP before? One of them's Drew Brees, and one of them's Russell Wilson. And Wilson came close last year, but Lamar Jackson, of course, did what he did. I think Seattle at home, tough spot for the Patriots here. I like Seattle and Russell Wilson to play really well and basically take advantage of what the Dolphins just weren't good enough to do last week. That Patriots defense is good, but they're not what they were with all the opt-outs. And I think Russell Wilson, you know, is able to put up a lot of points and Seattle wins at home.
I'm going to go litmus test here for both of these teams. I think for one, you're right. If you're Seattle, you got to go in there and dominate this football game. You got to do what you did last week, run the ball, Chris Carson, try to take some shots down the field with Metcalf and Lockett and see if you can get some points on a really good Patriots defense that is bad at linebacker, but really good in the secondary. So this is also a better test for Russell Wilson than Atlanta. It's like 31 for 35 is not going to happen, I think, this week. The Patriots have a better game plan. But I think it's a litmus test for New England, and we know they're not going to do the same thing each and every week. I think you're going to see Cam throw the football and lost within the shuffle of those all those carries they had against Miami. Cam went 15 for 19. So it's not as if Cam had, and really hit one drop by Edelman and a bunch of throwaways. So those are your four incompletions. Does Cam have to be try to get N'Keal Harry more involved? Maybe use the tight end group more involved? James White out of the backfield? We could see more passes in this game. But I think Cam showed some good efficiency that I think he's going to look at this as a chance to try to compete with Russell Wilson. We know Cam with a chip on his shoulder is dangerous. I still think Seattle wins this game, but I honestly think what we'll get from this game is maybe New England loses, and the rarity in 20 years, you might actually get a moral victory from Bill Belichick and the Patriots if they compete and take this game late in the fourth quarter. People go, wait, New England's not that bad?
I think you're right. I think litmus test is actually a great way to put it. If New England wins this game, the Cam Newton hype is going to be out of control the following week. And if Seattle wins and they win convincingly, you know, that's a statement kind of win where we start elevating them in the same conversation as, you know, any team in the NFL at that point. So I think litmus test is beautifully said.
And that all I ask for New England, keep it close. Don't get blown out. I mean, I looked at the schedule. I think you'd be happy with 2-2 out of the gate, even though you look at it, your best chances of beating Seattle and Kansas City in week four on the road are without fans or limited fans. So New England has that opportunity. I don't think they'll win this game, but I do think they will keep it close. And I think that spread is fairly adequate. I think you'll see more throwing Cam this week. Let's go to Monday night in Vegas. Opener for the Raiders against the Saints, who could be without Michael Thomas. My word is going to be gambling. Gambling galore here. Because I think Sean Payton's going to have to do some creative plays if Michael Thomas is out. Might see more Taysom Hill. But Manuel Sanders could have a big game. But you know Sean Payton loves to do some tricks. And John Gruden could throw some tricks out there at Henry Ruggs and have some fun. Home opener. Get a little crazy. I would not be shocked if the Vegas Raiders won this football game.
Wouldn't surprise me either. NFL could kind of be funky like that. And to me, you know, my phrase is the Death Star unveiled. You know, because, or excuse me, the Death Star revealed. Because we get a chance to see the Raiders' brand new stadium for the first time. So that's what I'm excited to see. I mean, looks like an absolute palace. I mean, it legitimately looks like the Death Star. I was in Vegas in February, and I remember driving past it, and I just couldn't wait to see what the finished version of it looked like. So very excited for this game. You know, obviously, how the Saints try and adapt without having Michael Thomas in the offense is going to be fascinating. And, you know, are the Raiders legit? I mean, you know, you beat the Panthers in week one. Nice win, but no one's going to call you a legit contender out of that AFC West. But if you beat the Saints, now all of a sudden, we're going to start talking about the Raiders. So another litmus test for the Raiders in this one. And obviously, you know, all about, you know, the reveal of their brand new stadium in Vegas.
You know, I think we mentioned Bill O'Brien has some gripes with the schedule people. I think John Gruden has some gripes with the schedule people. Their next five games, Saints, Patriots, Bills, Chiefs, Bucks. I guess John Gruden's not liked by a lot of people on Park Avenue.
No, and if they somehow survive that stretch, then we'll learn a lot about just how good this team can be, because their second half of the schedule certainly is a lot easier than the first. But that is a brutal stretch. So, you know, why not win on Monday night and open up your building in style then, knowing that you have a tough schedule following after that?
So, Jake, once again, as we wrap it up, tell listeners how they can follow you on Twitter and more about your show if you'd like.
Sure. So you can follow me on Twitter. It's just my name, at Jake Asman, J-A-K-E. A-S-M-A-N, and the show is Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on Sports Map Radio.
Be sure to check it out every weekday. Jake, again, thanks for hopping on. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk again soon. Thanks for the time.
Thanks for having me, Ricky.
Special thanks to Jake Asman for hopping on the show. Make sure you check out his show every weekday from 9 to 11 a.m. on Sports Map Radio. It's a good show. I've written about some of the interviews he's done with Tim Kirkchin and Barry Melrose for Barrett Sports Media, where I highlight ESPN personalities and things they say or what happens in the news. Jake's one of the rising stars in sports media. I highly recommend it. It's a really good show. Want to look into college football? Week 3 in the books. Week 2, really, when you look at actual games. And I think you had a couple of big statements on Saturday. Notre Dame got a shutout win over South Florida, 52-0. Dominated this game. Notre Dame did what they had to do. They started off slow against Duke last week, but I liked the way they played against USF. Oklahoma State had a little bit of a slow game. Their quarterback got banged up, but they found a way to beat Tulsa late. I think the two biggest statements come from the state of Florida. Let's start with Miami. A 47-34 win over Louisville, a matchup of two top 20 teams in Louisville, Kentucky, and De'Ara King from Miami, 18 of 30, 325, three touchdowns. A big game for Brevin Jordan at wide receiver, seven catches for a 120 and a score. Miami hosts Florida State next week. I think they play at Florida State. Let me get that officially for you, just to make sure. The Canes are at, no, they're home. Okay, so Canes are home against Florida State. That game's 7:30 on ABC next Saturday. So big game for Miami there. But you love the way the Hurricanes actually look like they have a quarterback. That's a good sign. The other game is UCF, known as the darlings of the non-Power 5 conferences. Dylan Gabriel, great game of quarterback. 27-41 for 417, four touchdowns. The Golden Knights scored 21 in the fourth quarter against a Georgia Tech team still improving, but the Yellow Jackets did beat Florida State and Tallahassee last week. So for UCF to dominate an ACC team the way they did, it's a good sign. And remember, there's a big matchup looming, hopefully, at the end of the year, Cincinnati and UCF. Right now, both teams are in the top 15. So if you're looking for that team that could potentially be that group of five that sneaks into the playoff, I doubt it will ever happen, but they could spoil a New Year's Six bowl here or there. Be a nice surprise. The Sun Belt was the big story last week. You had Arkansas State beat Kansas State. You've had Louisiana Lafayette beat Iowa State on the road, and the Raging Cajuns are in the top 20. They won their game against Georgia State on Saturday in overtime. You got to love the way they're playing. They had some big special team scores against the Cyclones. So that was a fun game as well. Some games of note for next Saturday. You have Kentucky at Auburn. That's a top 25 matchup at noon on the SEC Network. You have Mississippi State. Mike Leach makes his coaching debut for the Tigers at LSU. Remember, SEC play starts next week. How about this game at 3:30 on ESPN on Saturday? Army, who's in the top 25. Fortunately, their game against BYU postponed this week, but Army takes on Cincinnati. That's a fun game to keep an eye on. I think NC State at 20th ranked Virginia Tech's good. And what about Florida at Ole Miss? Lane Kiffin making his Ole Miss head coaching debut. That should be a good game. But let's talk about what the big news was in college football. And the Big Ten is back. The Big Ten is going to play October 23rd to 24th that weekend. They've been able to figure out that they're going to get antigen testing. This is a statement from the Big Ten that they'll require student athletes, coaches, trainers, and all and other individuals that are on the field for all practices and games to undergo daily antigen testing. They'll get enhanced cardiac screening and an enhanced data-driven approach when making decisions about practice or competition. So you look at all the Big Ten's concerns with myocarditis and the heart condition that comes from COVID-19 that is affecting a good amount of their athletes. And this is a situation. You've seen a lot of postponements across college football. Now, not enough to shut down the sport, but you have seen a good amount of games get postponed. And I'm not going to be one to rip Kevin Warren. I know a lot of people want to rip Kevin Warren. We've seen head coaches call out the Big Ten for not starting when the rest of the conferences did. And I think the Big Ten and Pac-12, if you want to say they made a mistake, but again, we talked about this when every sport shut down. I don't envy the position that these commissioners or conference leaders are in. They're making decisions that are unprecedented. There's no example to go off of. And I do believe that Kevin Warren was out to protect the athletes. And I can respect that. Because, again, they're student athletes. They're not professionals. And that's why I had a problem at the time when people were ripping the Big Ten for not playing. If it's not safe to play, they shouldn't play. Now, so far, we haven't had, luckily, anything serious happen yet to where we have to question that again. But I liked what Kevin Warren had to say. Kevin Warren was on College Game Day on Saturday. Said, "No one ever told me when they offered me the job it wouldn't be easy." And I like that quote because he understands the criticism he's getting. But his job as the commissioner is to protect the student athletes. He did his job. And ultimately, as long as there's testing and as long as they're able to do it without taking away the resources from others, then it's okay to play. Now, the Pac-12, I think, is going to have to try to figure out the same thing. And what was interesting thing from John Wilner from the Mercury News, San Jose Mercury News had this. Despite delay on he wrote an article, but the tweet that he has from late last night, despite delay on the CEO vote, the Pac-12 is aiming for a Halloween restart, even if only half the schools can play. And I think, again, the longer the Pac-12 takes with the report that they're willing to try to play and there's not a resolution, you're going to see what happened with the Big Ten. The Pac-12 does not want to put themselves in that position where then they start hearing from David Shaw and Clay Helton and Chip Kelly and Mario Cristobal. They don't want to be in that spot. So it's very important that if the Pac-12 has a plan, get it done now. And at least if you get it to October 31st, you could at least have enough games to try to get considered for the college football playoff. But at least the good thing is college football is in full swing and nothing serious has gone on yet, which is always good news. So we'll come back, we'll do a little bit of baseball, and I'll talk about why I hate expanded playoffs going forward. And why I don't like some of the ideas that Rob Manfred has in place. What a shocker. And we'll also look ahead to the final week of the regular season. You're listening to Kick 'Em with Keeler here on Full Press Radio. Welcome back to Kick 'Em with Keeler as we get into our baseball segment. Couple of notes before I get into the expanded postseason for this season and the new format they have with the bubble thing going on. Shout out to Albert Pujols. Hit his 661st home run on Friday, now passing Willie Mays. I mentioned that Pujols hit 660, that I wish it got more recognition because of how great our Pujols has been over the last decade plus. One of the better all-around hitters in the game. It kind of hurts that he's out in Los Angeles. The Angels aren't any good. Hurts Mike Trout, too. But Pujols should get a lot more love than what he's getting. And sadly, the steroid era, which I still would put a lot of steroid guys in the Hall of Fame, because it represents the era. The steroid era kind of dwindled the whole home run chase and the spotlight on big home run milestones. So it hurts Albert Pujols. The other big news was from Saturday. Justin Verlander announcing on Instagram that he is going to have Tommy John surgery and miss all of next season. That's huge. Because you look at the Astros right now, Zach Greinke's getting older. They don't have an ace in that rotation. And they've had a bad year offensively. They've had their share of injuries. But the Astros right now are a 500 baseball team. They're probably going to make the playoffs because the Mariners are three back. There's a big three-game series in Seattle on Monday. Mariners are going to have to at least take two games to stay alive. It is in Seattle. I know they changed the name of the ballpark recently, but it's in Seattle. But you look at the Astros right now. Dusty Baker's going to get in the playoffs, but do they keep Dusty for next year? You're looking at the Astros now in a potential rebuild mode. And the rest of the American League around them is getting better. The Yankees are still good. The White Sox we're seeing this year are on the rise. The Blue Jays are on the rise. You look at Seattle, that they got a good farm system. They're not right there, but even their division, Seattle's getting better. The Angels will always be right there, and I think they'll eventually get better. The Twins are good. The Indians are good. Tigers have some good young pitchers. The rest of the American League is getting better around them. The Rays, I'll even mention. And the Astros are kind of going on the decline. So keep that in mind as you look at the Astros next year. And you can argue, yes, they got a championship out of it. And you can also argue whether they take that championship seriously or not because of what happened in 2017. But for Justin Verlander, he's going to get over $30 million next year to not pitch. And you also wonder, is this the last time we've seen Justin Verlander on a mound? He's 37 years old right now. What is it going to be like for him going forward? I'm sure he's going to get a contract from somebody if he wants to pitch. But have we seen the last of at least a dominant Justin Verlander? It's not out of the question. He's going to be 39 in a couple of years from now when the season starts. It's tough to expect him to be dominant at age 39. So some sad news there. Now, let's take a look at the expanded playoffs for baseball. Now, they made the announcement last week that you're going to have your wild card games, your wild card series, the wild card round, best of three. They're going to be at the higher seeds ballpark for all three games. You're going to have a situation also on October 1st where every series is going to take place on ESPN, ESPN2, ABC. I think TBS is supposed to have at least a game, if not, at least, they're going to have all eight games on TV, which is going to be great. If you're a baseball fan, that's like heaven for you. You can maybe have a coffee in the morning while you watch baseball, have some lunch and watch baseball, your dinner, dessert, maybe grab another coffee because you're still up watching baseball. It's going to be fun. That part will be cool. Then you go to the division series, which is going to be in a bubble. The National League is going to be in Arlington, Globe Life Park, and in Houston for the NLDS. The NLCS will be in Arlington, where the World Series will also be. And on the American League side, the ALDS is in San Diego and L.A. The ALCS will be at Petco Park. Now, here's the changes they've made. In the DS and the CS, no days off. They're going to play straight through. ALDS begins October 5th, NLDS October 6th. You'll probably have a day off in between if each series goes five games, but that's it. They're going to play straight through. I get why. I got to finish this as quick as possible. It will help teams in that case that have great depth in their rotation. Like if the Indians, who are right now that seven seed, would play the White Sox. If Cleveland gets out of that best of five, you look at that rotation. It is deep with Bieber, Plesac, Carrasco, Savali. They have got a good rotation to stand up in a best of seven with no days off. I look at a team like the Dodgers, who can basically field two teams with the depth that they have. That helps them when there's no days off. Teams that it hurts? I would say the Yankees. Their rotation's been great. Jay Happ's pitched well. They've won 10 in a row going into today. Davey Garcia's been awesome. The offense is hitting home runs again. They hit him at an historic clip. 19 home runs in that Blue Jays series. It was insane. But if you're looking outside of Cole and Tanaka, there's no guarantee in that Yankee rotation. And Aaron Boone has used his bullpen a lot over the last 2 years in the postseason. You can't use your bullpen that much without days off. So that's something to monitor. A team like the Braves, who don't really exactly have a lot of rotation depth, that's going to be a concern. Another team I like with this format, the Cubs. Hendricks, Darvish. Darvish could be the Cy Young winner, I think, this year. Quintana, Lester. Cubs have good talent in that rotation. The one thing I don't like that Rob Manfred did, by the way, I don't like this expanded format because going forward, because it diminishes the 162-game season, you're going to have to find a way to give some advantage to at least a top seed if you do that. There could potentially be fans for the LCS and World Series. Here's why this idea is terrible. Number one, baseball's played the whole year without fans. Why can't we just finish the year without them? Why not? If you've already committed to play the whole regular season and the wild card series and the divisional round, why do we need fans for the last two rounds? You're going to expect, let's say, throw a team out there. Let's say the Braves. Are there many Braves fans? We're going to fly to Texas during a pandemic? Not really. The only team that would maybe help in this format is the Astros if they made the World Series, which they're not. But that's also an advantage that would be something the MLB would have a problem, I think, because the Astros would be the team that would get the bulk of the fans there. They're not the better team in most cases. That hurts. So I don't know if we should really have fans, at least. And if we have a bubble, if you're going to have the bubble concept, you can't bring fans into the bubble. The idea of a bubble is to make sure you play the games, you would ensure that you finish the postseason and you keep the players safe. That's the goal. We've seen in the we've seen NBA do it. We've seen the NHL do it. It's worked perfectly. We get why baseball has to go to this postseason format. Keep it that way. Looking at the final week of the season, I think you got some interesting storylines. One being the Reds, who as of today would play the Dodgers in that 1-8 matchup. And I think that's the last team the Dodgers want to see, because you could look at a potential best of three where the Dodgers see Trevor Bauer, who's got a chance to win the Cy Young, Luis Castillo, and Sonny Gray. That's a tough rotation to face in a best of three series. I think San Diego is the best team in the NL to beat the Dodgers in a best of five. Best of three, Reds have a shot. And that's, I'm not just saying that because the Reds are my World Series pick for the National League going into the year, but they're starting to get hot at the right time. Right now, they're that 8 seed at 26-27. But it's going to come down to that final week for Cincinnati, and they've got a tough series with Minnesota that is going to be something to keep an eye on. The Marlins, as the 5 seed, I think, are also a big story here. Miami's at 27-24. They've got a doubleheader with the Nats today. They play four in Atlanta. I think potentially could clinch a playoff spot in Yankee Stadium. That'd be cool for Derek Jeter, former Yankee great Hall of Famer who now owns the Marlins. That'd be a good story. I'm rooting for the Marlins. I think Don Mattingly has a good shot to win Manager of the Year. If not, Jace Tingler for the Padres. And that could be your 5-4 matchup in the National League. But the Marlins are a team I think that been one of the surprises this year. But it'll be interesting to see how they play over this last week. The National League has by far the bigger story in terms of playoff seed, like who actually gets in the playoffs. The American League is pretty much set, I would say, outside of the AL West second place team. Houston, again, 3 up on Seattle. They play the Mariners this week. Toronto's at 8 seed right now at 500, 26-26. They have a 3-game lead on Seattle as well. Toronto does host the Yankees this week. I think the Blue Jays are going to snap out of it. They're going to make the playoffs. They've been a good story, too, playing their games in Buffalo this year. That'd be a nice story for Toronto to make the playoffs. I don't know if they'll go on a run, but I think they'll get in. So what you're looking at in the National League, the Dodgers are going to be the 1 seed. Cubs and Braves fighting for that important 2 seed. And you have the matchup for the final 2 wild cards and second place in the Central. Second place in Central is key. Right now it's the Cardinals. Reds and Brewers are right there. And remember, the Cardinals and Brewers play a 5-game series, including one doubleheader, to end the season. That series could decide if not one or both teams or any of all get one team is going to get in out of that. Cincinnati could be the other one. So that 5-game series is huge. The Giants right now are outside looking in. They've got a doubleheader with the Padres at the end of the week. Who knows what San Diego will be playing for then, except trying to keep the Giants out of the playoffs. Mets are close. They're 24-28, but I think their schedule, they've got one more with Atlanta, then 3 with the Rays. We're trying to hold off the Yankees for the East, which they probably will, and 4 with Washington, which they probably will see Corbin and Scherzer. Even though the Nats are bad, those are still 2 good pitchers. I think the Mets' luck has kind of run out a little bit. The other storyline comes down to potential matchups. And right now, it looks like that 4-5 in the American League is going to be the Yankees and the Twins. Now, why is this huge in terms of home field? The Yankees are 21-7 at home. Twins are 21-5. You look at a case where home field, I don't think decides this series, but I think it gives the Twins more of a chance. Because if they go to Yankee Stadium again, they have not played well against the Yankees in the playoffs over the last decade. They were swept last year. And in an empty stadium, do the ghosts of Yankees past get to the Twins even more? I think they want all three games in Target Field. Does that mean the Twins will win the series? No. Would they have more of a shot? Yes. I think if that three games are in Yankee Stadium, I think the Yankees have a really good chance to sweep that series, especially the way they're playing right now. Luke Voit has a chance to win AL MVP. I don't think he will. I think it'll go to like Jose Abreu or Tim Anderson for the White Sox. But Voit's got a legitimate shot. He's got 20 home runs this year. And carried the Yankees when most of their guys were on the IL. The Yankees got Stanton back. They've got Judge back. The only person they're not going to get back is James Paxton, but their rotation has held up pretty strong since then. Look at the last 10 games. Jay Happ's thrown 8 shutout innings, even though the Red Sox are, let's face it, they're trash this year. They're not any good. Probably the second worst team in baseball behind the Pirates. Think how far the Red Sox have fallen. They've lost 12 straight to the Yankees. We'll take one more break. We'll come back. We'll do a little NBA, NHL, and we will look ahead to the final round of the U.S. Open later today. You're listening to Kicking with Keeler here on Full Press Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to our final segment here on Kicking with Keeler. I want to give you our daily live radio lineup that you can hear on fullpresscoverage.com. You have FPC Radio Live from 8:30 to 10 a.m. Eastern with Ian Glendon and Mike DeBate. From 10 a.m. to noon, it's Snowman in the Morning with Brian Snow. He's got a really great show there. Noon to 2 Eastern, it's our College Credit Hour with Memphis Spence. It's a good job there. And then from 5 to 6 Eastern, it is Ross Jackson, Dylan Sanders with Dylan and Ross Save Sports. Also a really cool show. So check out our live radio lineup every week. Guarantee you won't regret making that choice. Let's take a quick look at the other sports going on in the league. Let's start with the NBA. And I understand LeBron James was mad about only getting 16 first-place votes for NBA MVP. With all the media talk around LeBron and how great his season's been, and rightfully so, I can understand why LeBron should have had more of a gripe to get more votes. Doesn't mean he shouldn't have won. It means Giannis, to me, when you look at the MVP, it's not who the best player in the league is. Because you can make the argument LeBron James is the best player in the league, but it's who's the most valuable player to that season. And I'm sorry, LeBron, once you get Anthony Davis on your team, you lose MVP consideration to some degree because you're playing with another top five player. Giannis is barely playing with a top 20 player and had this dominant of a season. I know people want to rip on Giannis and say he's overrated. I'm sorry. Giannis is still a top five player in the NBA at the very least. Okay. One of the better defensive players in the league. He won Defensive Player of the Year. He's supposed to win MVP this year for the second straight year. Yes, his team disappointed in the bubble. I get that. But Giannis had a great season. Should have won the award. And I'm sorry. LeBron deserves criticism for not congratulating Giannis. At the very least, you could do that. I get you're mad. I get you finished second in the MVP 4 times. Believe me. I can. If he had just said, I congratulate Giannis. He had a great season. I could see why he got named the award. No. Couldn't even do that. We talk about this in sports. If we had best player in baseball, Mike Trout would win MVP every year. You look at the NL Cy Young, for example. Yu Darvish is having a better season. If he did best pitcher in baseball, it'd probably be Jacob deGrom. But we're not doing that. MVP is such a unclear explanation because it really comes down to who's voting in terms of what their definition of MVP is. There's no set definition. And that's the problem. That's a different discussion. But if you're LeBron James, yes, 16 first place votes, I was surprised Giannis won by so much. Because all I kept hearing was why LeBron had a case and why LeBron should win the award. And most people in the media were loud about LeBron getting the MVP, or at least some. And Giannis won by that much? I think LeBron could have gave a little more credit to Giannis. That's all. Looking around the two conference finals matchups, Celtics won on Saturday night, 117-106. They get back in the series with the Heat. Remember, because ESPN has the big mega cast of Saints Raiders, no basketball on Monday. So the Celtics and Heat do not play again until Wednesday. And that's an advantage to the Celtics. They got Gordon Hayward back in the lineup. 6 points, 5 boards, 4 assists, played 30 minutes. He's going to stay in the bubble, which I think is huge news for the Celtics. And now they have more depth. Jason Tatum had a huge game, 25 points, 14 boards, 8 assists. Celtics are really good in the paint, something they've struggled with over the first two games in terms of defending Bam Adebayo. But this was a good all-around game for Boston. They desperately needed it after everything that happened after Game 2 with Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and all those reports that there was confrontations going on in that locker room. They needed a big win to get back in the series. Miami still has the edge, but that was big for Boston. As for the Heat, Tyler Hero had a big second quarter, had 16 points, finished with 22. Bam Adebayo still good in the paint, though, 27 points, 16 rebounds. But Miami as a team just shot 27% from three, and they're a really good three-point shooting team. Maybe get Trey Crowder stop shooting threes. He was 2 for 10. Miami never led in this game, so this was from start to finish a picturesque performance by Brad Stevens' team. I give the Celtics a shot. I still think Miami wins the series, but this is a 6-7 game series, and I think the Celtics showed they can get back in the series, and the extra days off are going to benefit them more than they benefit Miami. As far as the West, I got to give my credit to the Nuggets because I've ripped them throughout the last few weeks on this show. When they were down 3-1 to Utah, I said, well, prove my point. The Nuggets are a team built for the regular season. Well, they shut me up big time. Came back against Utah, came back from double-digit deficits in games 5, 6, and 7 to beat the Clippers, and the Clippers should be disappointed. That's a major failure. Kawhi Leonard did not come up big in Game 7. Paul George did not come up big in Game 7. And the Clippers as a whole looked like they gave up in the fourth quarter in that seventh game. Doc Rivers has now been a part of 2-3-1 collapses. I don't think he should lose his job, but he also deserves a lot of blame in this process, because the Clippers had the most deep team going into the bubble. They looked like they were going to be the team that was going to challenge the Lakers to get to the NBA Finals, and they underachieved in a big way. And this could be next year, the last year they have Kawhi and Paul George, and they gave up a boatload of first-round picks to the Oklahoma City Thunder. That future for the Clippers does not look very good past next year. Missed opportunity. But for the Nuggets, Jamal Murray's turned into a star during this bubble. If he wasn't, he was already a good player, but he's become more nationally known through this process. We know how good Nikola Jokic has been. The problem the Nuggets have is the Lakers are on a different tier. They dominated game one. It was a lot more lopsided than that 12-point final indicates. Anthony Davis dominated, 37 points, 10 rebounds, 12 of 15 from the free throw line, commanded the paint. LeBron only had 15 points, but he had 12 assists and 6 boards. They got good three-point shooting from KCP, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and Kyle Kuzma. If the Lakers get that, they're tough to beat. Dwight Howard at 13 points off the bench. I think the Nuggets will win a game. If you want to give them two, I wouldn't argue with you. But the Lakers, remember, their first two series, they had bad game ones and bounced back. Now they're on clicking in game one. That's tough to ask Denver to kind of make this a long series. I think the Lakers will win, but all props to the Nuggets. They've reached the conference final. They've finally broken through that next tier. And that's a good sign going forward for Denver. But I think the great... People say Lakers-Celtics would be a great finals, and I get historically. Lakers-Heat, I think, is the more fun matchup because it's LeBron versus old coach Eric Spoelstra. You know Pat Riley wants his team to knock off LeBron. And I think the Heat are that fun team everybody likes to watch. They'll shoot the three. It kind of reminds you, maybe you get that upset like when Dallas beat Miami the first year LeBron was there. So a lot of things can change, but I think Heat-Lakers honestly be a lot better than Celtics-Lakers. Look at the NHL. Stars with a big win in Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Saturday night, 4-1 over the Lightning. Anton Khudobin had 35 saves, 22 in the third period. The Stars got goals from 4 different players, Joel Hanley, Jamie Oleksiak, Joel Kiviranta, and Jason Dickinson. So Dallas wins a game in which Sagan doesn't score, Ben doesn't score. I know they had a good young defenseman that normally has had good playoffs, Gurianov, I think. But they didn't get their big guys scored, and yet they did. And the Lightning, you didn't hear anything from Hedman in terms of any goals, nothing from Point, nothing from, in terms of their goaltender, Vasilevsky struggled. The Lightning are known for their goals. Nikita Kucherov, another good offensive player. That's concerning if you're a Lightning fan. Now, I still think Tampa's going to win the series. I think Tampa's going to win it. I think they'll win it in six games. This is a really fun series. Dallas, remember, beat Vegas in five games. Dallas, I think, has gone under the radar in this postseason. But the Stars, who haven't been in the Stanley Cup in, I think, two decades, since Brett Hull made that game-winning goal a long time ago against Dominik Hasek. I'm not the biggest hockey insider. I've told you that. But I think Dallas can win the series. I'll still stick with Tampa. I think their offensive firepower is going to emerge at some point in this series. Quick tennis note. Shout out to Naomi Osaka, who won the women's final in tennis last week over Victoria Azarenka in three sets. Osaka came up big in the match. She wins her second U.S. Open. She's not going to play the French Open because it's such a short turnaround. French Open, by the way, is next weekend. So add that to your eventful sports calendar. But Osaka, who, of course, wore on her mask all the people that were affected by police brutality and everything going on with social injustice. So props to Osaka for being the voice for people. That's, I think, big news. On the men's side, we talked about with Novak Djokovic out. That's a big loss for the sport. Their ratings went down, but a good five-setter between Dominic Thiem and Alexander Zverev. Thiem able to win his first Grand Slam and a comeback in five sets. That was a really fun match and should get at least some credit for Dominic Thiem, the Austrian. Look at the U.S. Open in golf. Final round today at Wingfoot in Mamaroneck, New York, and we have a really fun leaderboard. No Tiger Woods, who struggled big time this week. Had a rough Friday, did not make the cut. Phil Mickelson did not make the cut. And again, we've got an action-packed leaderboard. Matthew Wolf actually leads after three rounds. And Wolf's a young golfer from Oklahoma State. He had a good finish at the PGA Championship last month. If you watch him, he's got a hitch in his swing, but it's really fun to watch him. He hits the ball far. And you got a good final pairing at 1:30 Eastern later today on NBC. Between Matthew Wolf and Bryson DeChambeau, who just loves to hit driver on every par 4 and par 5. He shot a 70, even par on Saturday. Matthew Wolf shot 65. He was on fire on the front nine. Got a chance to watch some of that. Made some big birdies. He went even on the back nine, which is important because you look at Patrick Reed, who was 5 under at one point through four holes in terms of 5 under for the tournament. He finished 7 over. He finished 3 over for the tournament. So he shot, essentially, remember, it's 35 in and out. He shot 43 on the back nine. So that's what this course can do to you. Wingfoot is not kind to golfers. Depending on how the conditions are set up, and it's a little cool in New York this week. It feels like fall, and it's different because the U.S. Open is not usually played in fall. It's usually played in the summer. But you have a really good leaderboard. You have Louis Oosthuizen, who's 4 back, but he's a major champion. Hideki Matsuyama and Xander Schauffele are 5 back, and they are guys that a lot of people think could break through and win their first major. Rory McIlroy shot 2 under on Saturday. He's 6 off the lead. He's a name to watch if Rory can have a big round. So I think it's really limited to those 7. Zach Johnson is 7 back, former major champion. I don't think he can get there, even though he had a good round. Both him and Rory shot 68. But I think Wolf and DeChambeau, who are both looking for that first slam, first major tournament. Slam is in tennis, so it's not golf. But the first major tournament. Wolf is fun, though. I think if you watch NBC for a little bit, I know you'll watch football today, but tune in to Wolf DeChambeau. They've had some big matchups with each other. They had one earlier this year at the Rocket Mortgage. Not the Rocket Mortgage, the 3M Classic in Minnesota, which was a lot of fun. No, I think it was Rocket Mortgage. It was 3M a couple years ago, Rocket Mortgage this year in Detroit, where DeChambeau and Wolf basically came down to the final hole. They weren't in the same group. They've had rivalries in the last couple of years with each other where they both can hit the cover off the golf ball. keep that in mind. But this course, you can shoot 65 like we've seen Wolf do on Saturday, and we've seen Justin Thomas do it on Thursday. Of course, Justin Thomas is now four over for the championship, shot 76 on Saturday. But you could also shoot really high scores. This thing's far from over, and I think it's going to be so much fun to watch on NBC. So I want to thank all of you for tuning in. By the way, last week's episode was one of our best in the 40-plus episodes we've done here, so thank you all for tuning in. I really appreciate it. I want to hear from you. Feel free to tweet me at Rickinator555. Again, if you want to get involved next week with your team's word or phrase for your team's favorite NFL matchup in Week 3, please send it to me. I'll read it if it's on air, and if it's obviously not a lot of bad language, I will gladly read it on the air for you. Follow us on Twitter @FullPurseRadio, @FP_coverage. We have sites for every league, so be sure to check that out. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Please give a rating. I hope it's 5 stars. I want to hear from you. What do you like? What do you don't like? Please feel free to let me know. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast. Chances are Kicking with Keeler is there. And please download the Full Press Coverage app on your iOS or Android device. And if you miss any of the podcasts or radio, or want to listen to live radio or read some of our articles, you can catch all of that on the Full Press Coverage app. So we'll be back next week. We'll play Week 3 Word Association and do a little recap of college football. Conference finals in the NBA will be close to wrapping up by then. We'll talk more about the Stanley Cup. And we'll have some fun along the way. So until next time, Ricky Keeler saying enjoy your football Sunday. Stay safe. Please wear a mask. I'll see you back here next time.